Well, hey, everyone. We're brought to you today by AudiophileUSA.com. Over 42,000 used records online, all excellent and near mint condition. Don't play record Russian roulette with sellers on eBay or Discogs. Their near mint could be your VG minus. Go to AudiophileUSA.com, where you can always be confident you're getting the best. Search, dig, and load up the cart with your final vinyl upgrades at AudiophileUSA.com. And we're also brought to you by the Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. The Groove Washer makes your records sound their very best when you play them, and the Groove Guard record sleeves protect them when they're on the shelf. The best protection for your record collection, it's the Groove Washer, groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10. And with that, on with the show. Well, hey there, people. It's episode 331 of The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors, music nerds, and the undeniably handsome. So, yes, you are absolutely in the right spot. Today, we are talking with John Dwyer of the OCs, or the OCs, or OC, however you want to spell or pronounce it. John alters the name of the band every few years, a fact which drew me deeper into the fandom of his music even further than before. The music of the OCs is blood-pumpingly wonderful. I have the OCs on heavy rotation in our house frequently, and it just seems to go with most vibes and occasions we have. And if that wasn't enough, much of the OCs' music is pressed on special vinyl packages that totally make me nerd out and would tug at the heartstrings of any music collector. But it's not just vinyl, though. John and the OCs have recently put out a huge 8-track series, and they're always getting creative with their music and merch choices. You'll hear John talk about it today. He's a bit of a music nerd as well. John is also a co-founding partner in Castleface Records, which goes well beyond the music of the OCs and into other great bands and artists. Go check them out, grab some OCs vinyl as well as other label bands at castlefacerecords.com. Now, John is quite an amazing guy, a very entertaining interview. We actually went quite a bit longer than the session we're sharing today on this feed. However, I've put an extended version of this interview up at our Patreon site, patreon.com/vinylguide. Those of you listening legends who choose to support the Vinyl Guide get access to early, extended, and commercial-free interviews, secret episodes, special vinyl deals, and occasionally even free stuff we give away. Join us at patreon.com/vinylguide. $5 or $10 a month, whatever you could afford. It buys me burritos, keeps me pumping out these episodes, and gets you access to more stuff. That's patreon.com/vinylguide, where you get to hear the rest of the show. And finally, I'm going to ask each of you to please subscribe to the Vinyl Guide podcast in your podcast app. You'll be able to scroll through other episodes you may enjoy, including episode 325 with Ambrose Kenny Smith of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard and the Murlocs. That's episode 325 of the Vinyl Guide. Episode 320 with comedy legend Tommy Chong. Episode 305 with Dale Crover of Melvins. Episode 297 with Tom Scholes of Boston. Episode 293 with Billy Gibbons of ZZ Top. Episode 289 with Fred Armisen of Saturday Night Live and Portlandia fame. And heaps more. Subscribe to the Vinyl Guide podcast now. It's free. It's in your podcast app. Hit the plus sign. Hit the follow sign. Whatever you got to do to make sure you are alerted when a new episode of the Vinyl Guide comes out, and you'll be able to scroll through the episodes and enjoy any time. So now, with the upfronts done, let's get straight into our conversation with Mr. John Dwyer of the OCs. Mr. John Dwyer.
Hey, man.
How are you?
Good. Just very busy lately, but all good stuff. Idle hands, you know, so That's like my motto. I think these past 2 years I've just kept so busy that I can't really think about anything to keep me from losing my mind, and it's been really working, but in a weird way now I'm like hooked on this weird constant work, even more than usual. So
over the last few years, you know, I mean, everyone's kind of been forced to change their plans. Have you been able to find, you know, comfort in that? I mean, have you kind of refocused everything on recording? Are you now into this new routine?
Yeah. You know, I've kept, like I said, really, really busy. So, luckily there were still people that were willing to come over and do stuff in the studio, a lot of improv. The band was just putting off tours like three times in a row. Our booking agent was getting really good at just like emailing every promoter and being like, here's a new date. Can you accommodate? Maybe this will be petering out by then or whatever. So I just took on a couple really ambitious projects and I'm still chipping away at one major one right now, getting good at animating, which has been interesting to learn at my age.
Okay.
Especially considering all the tools that are available now, you know. But you know, I think I did pretty good, you know. I got along with all those close to me and I just feel lucky, you know, like I didn't get super sick when I got COVID and made, you know, I had plenty of opportunity at my fingertips for the past 2 years to keep myself busy. So
you've been stockpiling material, getting ready for some releases? Is that
for the next pandemic? Yeah, right now I'm pretty much caught up. I got a couple, I mean, it's been a damaged bug record I've been working on and off on for 4 years, probably, like, of originals. Not the covers record was sort of a way to, you know, take five on that so I can maybe get some inspiration back. But now it feels like it might be a great lost record because I think I might start from scratch on it again and just take the beats and start building from the beginning again.
When you're working on projects, are you working on, do you have multiple projects going at once and you kind of put something down and maybe get back to it later? Or do you kind of focus and just move through it and then move to the next one?
Preferably not multiple things. Like when I was a kid, I would read like 6 or 7 books at a time. And then I got more into smoking dope and I realized like I'd pick up a book and I'd be like, what the hell is going on here? Like my brain couldn't keep track of several reads at once, which is very much how it is with art for me. So usually I'll maybe have 2 things I'm working on at the same time. But for music, I find I like to do it all at once. Like I like to have a writing session, whether that be a month or two or a week of improv or whatever, and then move on to mixing and editing. And then, you know, I have it all compartmentalized, and that's how the most enjoyment I reap from it is doing it all at once and then putting it behind me and moving on to the next thing. But right now I have, probably mostly because of the way things have been for the past years, I have several things going at once. Mm-hmm. Because why the fuck not? You know? So it just became like, just run with it. You know, if you have an idea, try it. If it doesn't work, whatever, you tried, you know?
Yeah. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine the other night, and we were talking about a lot of artists, they start with, they go from heavier to softer, right? Mm-hmm. And we call it the Sting trajectory, right? You know, you start with the fast stuff.
I'm a fan of Sting, but I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, and that's not uncommon, and maybe that's just kind of a natural, you know, human rhythm thing. You mm-hmm. seem to be taking the opposite.
That's really intentional. Like, when I first started playing music, I got really into the noise scene in Providence, Rhode Island, which was really not even like noisy rock, but like just noise. Like, I would go see Masana would play up in Boston, or CCCC, or Myers Bao, like a lot of Japanese noise, obviously, but also Crank Sturgeon, the bands like To Live and Shave in LA from Florida, Harry Pussy, bands that were like I didn't know how to play guitar. So like this, and somehow like the visceral punk attitude of it really spoke to me. So I started out there. Then I learned how to play guitar over 20 years of bumbling my way through it to get where I am today. And I noticed things about bands that I really liked. Their material as they grew older would get safer, less aggressive. And it was almost like an old couch or something that was just getting ready, like putting off being thrown away, like just milking without, you know. So like I've really made an effort to like keep up the pace and to go heavier or noisier or, you know, experimenting more with whatever the fuck I want. I mean, life is very short, so I don't see any reason to like hold yourself back, but intentionally trying not to write an indie rock record or a soft record, unless it's intentionally so with strings or whatever. But you know what I mean? Like our live show, I feel like, I always admired Lemmy because right up till the end, you're like, or even Marky Smith is like, this person's going to die on stage. And I was like, you know, that's a good way to go, I think. So mm-hmm. why not invoke a heart attack, you know, on stage? So wait till you hear our next set of material. It's starting to get a little bit absurd, actually. I think we might lose some fans on this one. I'm not sure.
Oh, okay. All right. So are we going which direction? Or are we going You're not stinging out on us.
I mean, the funny thing about our band is I think when I was a kid, I had disdain for any act that was moving around a lot, you know, because I like, you know, like the Subhumans, who for like 30 years recorded very similar albums, all of which fucking rule, even up through like the 90s. And I saw them recently and they were amazing. And it's like, you know, sometimes you're like, just, you know, give me a cheeseburger. I want a cheeseburger. But like now, like I said, I feel like something has clicked inside of me where I'm like, I'm just going to do whatever I want. And if this is the mode that we're feeling this day, then we're just going to run with it. But that being said, I think OCs has a, even no matter what we do, you can always hear us in it. So like if it's like super heavy or punky or noisy or even mellow, it has this commonality, this thread running through the whole thing where I think it's recognizable. I love it when somebody who hates my band, which just happened the other night, a guy I kind of know who's brutally honest was like, yeah, I always thought you were a dick because of an interaction we had when I was a kid where he was actually being an asshole and I shut him down. But like, he was like, you know, for years I talked shit. I hated your band because you were an asshole to me. And then I was in a car waking up from a nap on tour and I was like, what's this is awesome. And they were like, it's OCs. And he was like, God damn it. And like, now we're friends because he's a local guy. I see him all the time. We had a pretty good laugh about it. And I was just like, yeah, like I get that a lot. Like somebody being like, cause it's to a fan, they'll recognize it. But I think to an outsider, sometimes people are surprised. So the new direction, to really take the long way around, is more of the same. I don't want to give away too much, but like, it's definitely, it was like a mood we had. And I was like, how do you guys feel about doing this? And everybody was like, I'm in. So we did, I will say this, that we've been recording at my house, which is something as the full band we've never done before. And that's been really fun.
Okay. So Stusta Studio has been your work.
I mean, that's, it's, everybody comes over and they're like, man cave. And I'm like, that's sadly exactly, it's full of my huge toy collection. So every time you want to like turn on a compressor or something, you're like moving like Star Wars action figures or some such nonsense. So yeah.
Okay. Well, that's a really good segue because we talk about here on the Vinyl Guide collecting a lot of records. I see your record collection behind you, but you're not limited to records. You're figures, toys, everything.
We can take, yeah, I have a problem with a lot of things, but during COVID, we could take a little walk into the record area.
Sure.
During COVID, every couple months, I was building like record shelves with my neighbor who has a wood shop. So there's like, basically the whole. You know how it is? It's like, it goes from the hunt. There's a little bit more in this, in back here. There, that's where all the classical and box sets are. But during COVID, it was a lot of my friends were sending shit back and forth where you'd be like, oh, you like that? Check this out, you know? And there was a lot of like Discogs hunting because I don't have like social media. So I'm not like local record shops were like putting shit up on social media. But I was inadvertently buying stuff off local merchants on Discogs. So I would get an email and they'd be like, hey, do you want to just roll by and pick this up and save $5? And I'd be like, oh, you're like a block away from me. I was buying records from a guy like two blocks down. These past couple of years, I definitely went hog wild and it's coming time now to thin the herd a little bit. Like I have to go in and be like, okay, do I really need two of these? You know, so...
The pendulum has swung one way, and did it become a bit of a problem? I mean, do you have a lot of records where you're like, I bought them, I didn't. Yeah.
I love listening to records. I'm all about it. And I love the format of vinyl. When I was a kid, one of my earliest memories of hearing Can, who's been like one of the biggest influences on me, obviously, was at my friend's house holding Monster Movie in my hand on vinyl, probably doing one of my first bong rips of all time. So like being like an annihilated teenager, looking at this record and being totally immersed in the record cover and then flipping it over and being the music, I'd never heard anything like it. So I was like reading the liner notes and just having like a weird cathartic and visceral moment, like the jumping off point. I can like go right back to that moment of like being like reading this big format and listening to a record at my friend's house and making them play You Do Right like three times in a row until he was like, all right, that's enough. He's like, we don't need to listen. He was sober too. And he's like, this sucks for me, frankly, you know? But, you know, that started a love affair. And when I was a kid, I would always have a footlocker of records and I never had any money. I worked as little as possible. So I was constantly flipping records. I would buy records and unless I was totally in love with it or had destroyed it, so it wasn't sellable, I was constantly selling my records. And now that I have a home, basically the joke with my ex-girlfriend was always that I was building a coffin full of records to be buried in. I was like, yeah, then just burn the place down when I die.
Yeah.
It'll be like a petroleum field fire. But Now
the Viking funeral. That's
like the whole city. It ruins the air for everybody. Definitely leaving a footprint behind. But
I'm a little bit worried about that. I've got a deal with one of my best friends who runs a record shop. If something were to happen to me, hopefully that will be quite a long way from now, but I don't want to leave my family a problem.
That's exactly it. Yeah, you're like, will you throw this away for me? Or can you go put these up on eBay one at a time for the rest of your life? You know, like, Jesus.
So my strategy is this. I've got 10 records that represent me. I've got a box, right? And in fact, I'm still kind of working out what those 10 are going to be. That's going to be what my kids can say, okay, here's kind of where dad's head was at, you know? And the rest of them, the record store guy is going to come through and sell them and give my wife
the vultures.
Yeah. I don't want her to have to deal with
the tabernacle that they take away and then they descend and just blood everywhere.
That's really cool.
I like the idea. I'm curious about the 10 that represent you. Are they like a pretty broad spectrum? I'm not going to ask you what they are. But you're like, okay, I'm allowed 3 jazz, 2 classical, or how does that work?
I'm not being too prescriptive, but I know like A Love Supreme, my copy is going in there. There's going to be an AC/DC, but I'm not saying, you know, I'm not going to divide it up.
Music.
Yeah.
You could say any band probably, and I'd be like, fuck yeah, Desert Island for sure. Adam and the Ants, why not? You know, I love that shit. I'm all about it. I'm really not all that snooty when it comes to crossing boundaries.
So, so what's the most out of place record you have in your collection?
Well, I feel like people I talk to are surprised that I really like pop, not so much contemporary pop. Like it's funny because I kind of loathe the industry of writing songs for pop stars now. Like I have friends who do it, and to me, it's like they've left music behind and just made it into a financial. Like they're always hoping that they're going to sell a song to fucking Jay-Z or some shit. That being said, I love a lot of old school bands that were cut from that cloth of like songwriters being like for girl groups or ABBA or, you know, whatever. Like, I'm a huge fan of old pop. So I don't know about out of place, but like, I feel like when fans of mine hear that I like something, for instance, ABBA is the perfect example where I'd be like, I love ABBA. I was so excited that they put out a new record. It was just okay. But still, people would be like, you like ABBA? And I'm like, how do you not like ABBA? But, you know, it's like a guilty pleasure. But I feel like my music, coming from a place of not being able to know not knowing what I'm doing and not being able to write those kind of songs, there's a little tiny bit of that and everything, you know? And it's like that hookiness. I love Michael Jackson. I love the Jacksons, you know? Blame It on Boogie. I remember roller skating a few years ago with a buddy of mine, and I was like, I haven't been roller skating since I was a kid. He's like, let's go. And me and him and his girlfriend went, and we were like screwing around, and they put on Blame It on the Boogie, and I've never heard that song. And I was like, what is this? And he's like, are you serious? And like, I went out and bought that record like the next day. I was like, this record's amazing. But, you know, I think I have almost the whole collection of all the Phil Spector, Red, right. 45s of all the girl groups. I have a pretty broad spectrum, but I would say like, if you looked at my collection, there's like lots of rock, lots of 90s hip hop, noisy experimental stuff, tons of jazz. Like I, for me, weirdness was always my favorite thing. Like anything that was not typical. So it's kind of weird that I like these things that are vastly loved by huge swaths of people, you know, like Phil Spector songs or perfect example to be like, you know, I was like, I love the Beatles too. Like whenever somebody's like, I don't like the Beatles, I'm like, fuck off. Everybody likes the Beatles, you know, like you argumentative asshole. So I also fall prey to a good hook, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of very standard records is what I'm saying. Like when you look through, you're like, Bette Midler. And I'm like, yes, it's a good record, you know. Like she's got a couple. Frankie Valli, big fan of Frankie Valli.
Is there a title or an artist that you can't even pass up a used one? Like even if you have 2 or 3 copies at home, you can't leave the shop if it's cheap enough.
I will buy it for somebody else. There's 2 records in particular that I always keep my eyes open for. And back in the day, there were $5 records. Now they're probably like 10. Eddie Harris's I Need Some Money and John Sermon and Stu Martin Live at Woodstock Town Hall. Those 2 records, like that John Sermon and Stu Martin record, it's just Stu Martin on drums with, I think, a synthesizer playing random, and then they're just jamming over it. It's an incredible recording that was given to me by this amazing metal drummer years ago. And then like a year later, he was at my house and he's like, did you listen to that yet? And I was like, no. He's like, put it on right now, dude. And I was like, ugh, because, you know, people lay stuff on you, especially as a collector, if you're getting records, they sometimes takes a while to get to them. Yeah. But this had literally been a year, and he's like, dude, put it on. And then immediately I was like, how have I not listened to this? Like, and then I became obsessed with John Sermon. And the same goes with Eddie Harris. Like, I dug around for more of that sort of his far out stuff with the electronic saxophone. But that I Need Some Money record is a perfect album to me. And I'll buy it and give it to somebody, just like this metal drummer did for me. I'll always hand that John Sermon record over and be like, be prepared to have a big rabbit hole on this guy, both Stu Martin and John Sermon. Like, good luck finding these records at Amoeba, you know?
I do the same with Miles Davis Tribute to Jack Johnson. If I could find... And again, it used to be a $5 record. Now it's 10, but I'll never pass it up if it's cheap enough, because I hand it out like a prescription. Right.
Yeah, that's the record. I could swear that was the record that he had the quote that was like, I put together the best rock band you've never heard of, or some shit like that. And that record is really rocky, even out of his fusion stuff. You know, that one's like really John McLaughlin plays a chord in that I've ripped off so many times. It's the one that it's like this really diminished rock chord. And I remember looking it up one time on YouTube. I was like, what is that chord? And then I was like, yeah, I'm going to use that all the time now. Because it was literally a fingering that I'd never used. And I've used it in OCs 100 times in the improv stuff. I mean, if you know the chord, you'll pick it out and you're like, oh, he's doing it right there. Yeah. And like, John, I mean, obviously John McLaughlin is a hero of mine. But yeah, those two records, you know how it is when I see it, I'm always like, oh, yes. And like, find my one stoner buddy and I'm like, here you go, man, enjoy. Yeah.
So with your rare collection, are you do you care about if it's a first pressing, a recent pressing? Does that matter that much to you?
No, not at all. I have a lot of friends who obsess over that stuff, or will like brag like it's first pressing. And to me, I love reissues. I'm all about it, especially when somebody, like, sometimes I feel like like I could say like Mississippi Records is a good example, where they're dealing directly with the bands rather than the labels that claim ownership over this stuff from decades ago, where there's no contract probably left around, you know. And sometimes these are these homages or like, okay, another great example, I don't know if it was Sundazed did that And Oregon Skip Spence triple record collection, which I had never heard of and stuff. Cause you know, the internet's full of, you can like follow an artist you like and be like, oh shit, like some extra new shit I've never heard, or a live show. That Skip Spence 3 record box set is incredible, with all these takes. Like, I think one whole side of a record is one song over and over again, like several takes. I love stuff like that because I'm always, you know, digging more and more and more. So like when I got into Syd Barrett when I was a kid, I started hunting for every little piece, that every like little crumb that was left over that wasn't on a record. Bob Dylan blues, all that kind of stuff, live performances that were like recorded terribly. But I do like an original pressing if I luck into one. Like, I think I got like a nice Saw Delight, a can Saw Delight Japanese pressing that's all in Japanese. And I was like, in Japan. And I was like, what? So that to me is nice because I'm such a fan. But I also really like people's reinterest in things. And when they sort of, you know, I'm always looking to do reissues of bands that I feel like have been like bootlegged a million times. You can be like, hey, like if we can actually talk to the band, maybe we can get some unused material. But really, if I'm being brutally honest, I will just buy the cheapest copy that's not shit on Discogs. Like, or if I'm in a store, I'll tend to pick up whatever if I'm in a store if it strikes my fancy. But on Discogs, I'll be like, okay, who's the cheapest and who's very good or up? Like with the grading, you know?
Quality. Yeah.
In fact, if the sleeve, I can't tell you how many times I bought a record, they're like, this record was in a fire and then it got hosed down, but the record is fine. I'm like, yeah, I don't give a shit about the sleeve. Like, it'll show up like completely modeled and moldy, and I'll be like, oh yeah, it smells like a fire, but the record is mint. I was like, that's good, as long as it's in a poly bag, it's fine for me, you know.
So when you get those records, do you have like a bit of a routine? You clean them, resleeve them, or do you kind of write them hard, put away wet?
I mean I have records from my parents that looks like they were cutting rails on them. They're like in such a disgrace. Like, I have an original copy of Electric Ladyland. That was one of the first records I ever got because I went through my parents' collection, and that record looks like it was, I don't even know, on the floor of a car for 20 years, you know, but it's still playable. Mm-hmm. I did the trick with the wood glue where which actually works really well, but it's a huge pain in the ass. So you really have to like this one record where you put the glue on, smear it around, let it dry overnight, and then peel it off, and it actually pulls everything out of the grooves. The record sounds almost brand new, considering it was like so noisy. But I do have like some paper inner sleeves. So like if a record is blown out, I get used really cheap, I'll put like a new sleeve in there. And I'll make sure there's no debris in. Because you know how sometimes like at a yard sale, you'll like pull a record out and you'll hear it go like, and you're like, is there sand inside the sleeve? And the record's just fucking destroyed. But I'm, again, not too picky. Like something about a slightly noisy old record. Like I have some old Chet Baker records that are look like they were played a million times. And they're like that kind of like really old heavy vinyl that's sort of like square edged. Yeah. Really nice. But they're like, you know, they're probably like somebody's just like smoking over them and like putting resting drinks on them going around and around. So like I kind of like that about them, you know, as long as they don't skip. Skipping is the one thing I want to avoid. I do have a nice cleaner, but I just kind of hand clean every record when I put it on and then put it back in. You know, I've never found a way to get rid of static electricity perfectly. I did recently. I have a Technics 1200 after finally getting a bunch of like vintage players over the years. I finally just bought the old Workhorse DJ gear drive one. Because I was like, I would use them DJing and I was like, these are great. It's just very simple, does everything, you know, really heavy. So it doesn't really feed back. And I got that thing tuned up for like $200. And now every record, you know, every record plays really nicely. Because for years I'd be like, I put a dime on there or like a weight, and I finally got it like perfect. So I was like, don't nobody touch this, you know?
Yeah, yeah. You got to dial that right in. And I'm not good at, I've got a guy that comes over about once a year just to make sure it's, you know.
My favorite tutorial I've ever seen on setting a record player, which was the Technics 1200 specifically, was Qbert, DJ Qbert. He's like the most famous scratcher in the world who they like banned from scratching competitions because he would just always win. So now I think he's the judge. Because they're like, dude, like he was just like, he would like scratching with his face and, you know, or just insane guy from San Francisco, young dude. But his tutorials are really great because he's just pretty funny. And you could tell that he's like, knows the record player inside out and has probably destroyed a million of them. So he's like, after I used his setup, I was like, oh, this shit works perfectly now, you know?
So OC's is a very vinyl heavy band. You guys celebrate vinyl. What role do you see vinyl playing in OC's?
We'll be back after these messages.
Hey everyone, let me tell you about AudiophileUSA.com. AudiophileUSA.com is a fantastic place to buy used records online. AudiophileUSA.com has a heap of inventory, like tens of thousands of records you could search through online, and they are all excellent and near mint quality. These are your final upgrades, beautiful records that you can enjoy for years to come. AudiophileUSA.com is a family-owned and operated business, and they work hard to find the absolute cleanest records in the world and make them available to you. Head up there now, AudiophileUSA.com, search and dig through their selection and find the deals. Get a box of love on its way to you now from AudiophileUSA.com. Now, I know that you know that the Groove Washer is the best record cleaner in the world, but did you know that Groove Washer now makes archival quality record sleeves too? Yep. The world's best record cleaner is now making some fantastic sleeves and record accessories for a limited time introductory offer. The Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves are absolutely fantastic, so head up there now and try them for yourself. Go to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE10. That's the Groove Washer record cleaners, record sleeves, and other protection for your record collection. That's groovewasher.com.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. OC's is a very vinyl-heavy band. You guys celebrate vinyl. What role do you see vinyl playing in OC's?
I'm all about the LPs. In fact, if anything, at this point, I would cut out CDs entirely. But it seems that radio stations haven't really caught up on the digital download now. So a lot of times they won't want to play something from, you know, somebody that's not super famous, that's not a digital download. So you have to still send a format there.
Are radio stations still important?
I mean, I love radio stations. I really do. Like I listen to Left Wing Radio every morning. I like wake up and listen to like Larry Mantle. For some reason, that guy to me is like my Santa Claus, like regardless of what he's talking about or saying that day. But at the same time, college radio stations, like those kids, the fact that they're still sort of like holding on to the torch for that, even though internet radio and like Spotify and all that shit is like sort of becoming the new model. I love that those kids want to be able to like work in some sort of broadcasting, and technically those kids are like these like nerdy fun kids who are actually into the music. Whereas Spotify is really impersonal to me. All that shit is just very, I mean, you can't fight it. So there's no point in it. I tried for a long time, and then kids at the merch would be like, why are you not on Spotify? And I finally be like, fine, we're on Spotify, whatever. Like if that's the only way you're going to listen to it, then I'll do it. You know, but vinyl is like a way, like when I go to a show, not my own band, and I like a band, I will buy their record automatically because you want to support the band directly. But also like there's the chance that record might kick ass. My favorite thing ever is when you go to a show and you're like, is this record what you did tonight? And they're like, yeah, absolutely. All the same. So then you get at home, you're like, this is a completely different, which I think happens with us a lot because our shit is so wildly different. So like I try to make sure our merch person always, like when somebody's like, what's this one? And he's like, it's acoustic. Like, prepare yourself. Like, if you liked what you saw tonight, then these five records are in that vein. And if you want to go deeper, all this other shit, you know, this one's just synthesizers. But I mean, I just love the format, you know? So like it's not paramount, but it is like really high on the totem of when I'm putting together a record, all the pieces coming together, the artwork and the actual physical copy of it, you know. Mm-hmm. I also kind of weirdly am pro digital though. Like I don't mind the digital format. I think I don't like streaming so much when I'm not home. When I'm on the road, I like to have, I actually bought like a hopped up iPod offline of this guy that makes solid state like terabyte hard drives. Oh. Okay. Inside, you can have, I basically have my whole collection. I'll go online and like find everything and put it in there so I could just have it in my pocket without having to like rely on like spotty Wi-Fi or whatever, or roaming mm-hmm. charges while in Europe or whatever. So I'm like, I'm really pro. Like I remember Patton Oswalt doing a bit years ago about being like, yeah, in the future you're gonna have something the size of a cassette that'll have your whole record collection on it. And you're like, that's amazing. But at home, I really love like records, you know. It has become funny, and me and my band talk about this all the time when we're on the road. People, like I have a friend who always be like, hey, I'm bringing you a box of records tonight. And I'm in like the UK, and I'm like, do not bring a fucking box of records to me at the show because I cannot carry them home. Like my shit is so uniformly packed now when I'm on the road. I'm such a master packer that I was like, I can buy like one like thing of certs and like cram them into my suitcase, but he'll bring me like a box of records anyway. So we're all like sort of like divvying them up. I'm like, okay, who wants this psych comp? Like, you know, but you know how it is. They're like records yeah. are an obligation. This is like, it's like it's a hobby, but it's also like in a weird way, a way of life. Like if you're like getting as deep as you are, it's like
you could leave CDs in the hotel and probably not even feel any shame. But a record,
like, yeah, like the housekeeping will come in and be like, like, who wants this shit? You know? Yeah, we literally only make CDs now for the record the radio stations that did it again.
Right.
And then we have like a very small, I think they sell online, okay, but it shows every now and then. Like it's always like an older German guy's like, no CDs tonight, you know, and you're like, no, Uli, no CDs, man. You know, like, so lately I have noticed, I think most of the people that come to our shows already have all of our vinyls. So we have such a ominous pile of shit on the merch table, albeit eye candy. It's a lot. Like when somebody walks up, they're like, hi, I'm new. And then they're like, Jesus Christ, it's like too much. That's why we always recommend the new record first. If they like the show, it's usually closest to that.
Right.
But I get it, you know, like I think we've been selling a lot of t-shirts lately. Like most of our fans already have the stuff. So we're sort of always like guessing how much to bring on the road, you know, like mm-hmm. it varies. But lately it's just been t-shirts. Merchandising is like.
What's the wackiest thing you ever put on the merch table?
We've had all kinds of shit. We've had incense, action figures, fuck, wacky. I don't think we've ever had any drugs, although I would love to. We've been approached by branding sort of like marijuana companies are like, how would you feel about having your own strain? I was like, I would love that. And then of course, because they're weed stoners, they never contact you again. Like the dude's like, oh dude, I totally forgot. You're like,
they yeah, lost your number.
Yeah. Like there was a guy who approached me recently and I'm trying to remember who it was right now. And of course I'm the same as him, but I was like, that kind of thing obviously would require certain parameters being set, but I would love to have something like that. There was ideas that I had that didn't come to fruit because of cost. Like one thing was I noticed back in the first wave of tech companies in San Francisco. They were giving away all this shitty swag. Mm-hmm. And one of the things was some company called eploids.com, which I can guarantee you isn't a company anymore. But they had this Frisbee that I still own that just had like a vertical line on the side of it of LEDs. But when you threw it, it would say the name of the company as it spun just by blinking LEDs at a certain light frequency. And it was so cool. So I was like, we can make OC's Frisbees that would say OC's. And that night you could play at night in the dark and you just see your name like OC's.
Right.
But when I tried to actually get the company that made, I found the company that made that Frisbee. And they're like, yeah, you need to buy 5,000 of these. And I was like, 5,000? It was in China. And there were guys like, I'll make them for you, but I'm going to send you a whole freight truck. And I was like, no, I can't. That so like I have all these like brand
can
ideas.
I get 200 samples?
yeah exactly. I'm gonna need about 1,000. I mean, we'd get rid of them, but I'd probably still be sitting on them at my house, you know.
Well, I think that's kind of the key with vinyl. Like, you know, you do these limited vinyl pressings of 200, 500 stuff. That way they become somewhat collectible, somewhat desirable, and you're not sitting on a bunch of them. People want them and then right. they go. What are your feelings about like when you see one of your records that's, you know, $300-$400?
I mean, that's absurd. Obviously, we did that 8-track collection, which was incredibly expensive for that kid to do. And I remember seeing some people online griping like $400, and I was like, yeah, but dude, like, I think that kid lost money on that project. Yeah. You know? Very cool though. I don't hate that vinyl can get really expensive because there's like, all right, for instance, there's a record I have on my Discogs account that's always popping up because I have it on my looking for it or whatever, the followed search, mm-hmm. and it's the Moondog record Heart Songs, which is like some stuff from his German recordings where he's singing. It's fantastic, but the record's like 130 euros. And I don't think I've ever spent that kind of money on a record. I'm like really cheap with records. Like I'll always buy the cheapest copy and I'll wait for something to be repressed. Like I'll like look in the comments and some guy's like getting repressed next year. And I was like, oh wait, you know, that being said, I get that costs that much because it's, you know, it's old and rare. What bothers me more is the flipping aspect of it. And I'm sure everybody kind of hates that, but that's capitalism. That's where we live, you know? So people buying like 5 copies of something because they're sniping it early and then flipping 4 of them. You know, I've actually busted kids online for having me sign some posters for them and then flipping them. And I was like, take this fucking down, you little prick. You know, like, I was like, you made me sign this. And I physically remember you. I remember what you look like because I was like 10 things you want me to sign. He's like, just a huge fan, dude. And then like somebody being like, this asshole selling like 10 of these posters from your last tour. And I'm like, dude, like we had a conversation. And I remember him being like, sorry. And I was like, cool. Take it down though, you dick. Like, this is just a dick. You lied to me to get me to make this for you so you could make like, you know, $30, just weird. I, you know, it's rarity is like the supply and demand is always going to drive things up. Everything is so expensive now. It's hard for me to really judge. Like pieces of gear I have are like that I bought for like $500 back in the day, which seemed like a lot to me when I was a kid, are now like $5,000. So it's like, again, I don't really know how to fight it, but it is the absurdity levels up there, especially with vinyl. Mm-hmm. But I mean, what are you going to do? The other option, I guess, is we've overpressed in the past for requests from our distributor or whatever, and then ended up sitting on, not OCs, but other acts that I've been in, sitting on fucking records for like 3-4 years. And the problem with LPs is when you have one on a shelf that's properly made for LPs, it's fine, you know, in a controlled environment. But when you have boxes of them sitting there, that box on the bottom, like you have to like rotate that shit because I remember going like after 2 years off through COVID, at our practice space going through our merch and looking at that record box in the bottom and be like, I have to just throw this in the trash. I was like, these records are just fucking destroyed from being on the bottom, you know, right. Like, so you don't want to sit on it. So it's like always this sort of juggling act of like trying to determine how many to press to keep it from being the price to be driven up. But also you don't really want it being $2 on Discogs.
Right.
Although that being said, how excited are you when you find a record that you love that costs $2 and you're like, is everybody crazy? Like, why is this record only $2? I bought a copy of that record, The Fourth Wall, which I never heard this band by Flying Lizards.
Okay. Yeah.
Heard that album is amazing. And it was like $6. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, how have I never heard this before? You know?
Okay. I got their debut, the one with money on it.
that's the record that everybody recommended. So I liked that record. My friend was DJing a tune off it the other night and I'd never heard it. And he's like, how have you never heard this? It's like a dollar spin record, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I rabbit holed on them a little bit and I found that their second record, I think it's their second record called Fourth Wall, which has like an Aztec warrior on the cover, mm-hmm. Has more originals on it. And that to me really spoke to me. It's a really great record, but it's like dirt cheap, you know? But it's okay. Like very strange. It's like Klaus Nomi meets like Kaz, like really weird. Hard, it's very hard to describe, you know. It's cool stuff.
No, sounds intriguing. No, it's yeah, because I like the first one was all right, but I didn't even know they had they went deeper than that.
They have a bunch of records. I drew the line after the second one; they lost me. But that second record was that was my record of the week that blew my mind. Where I listened to it like four times in a row, and I was like, "Fuck, mm-hmm. this is the record." It's like super poppy and hooky, you know. Mm-hmm.
So. Now, do you have an archive area where you keep your tapes and you keep all the masters and you track everything?
Yeah, I actually had a huge pile in the underneath of my house, which isn't quite a basement or a crawl space. It's sort of this like halfway point, but it's really mm-hmm. dirty. So at one point, and it was also several layers deep. So when I actually had to find a test pressing to sell for charity or something like that, mm-hmm. I was in there like sweating my ass off, getting dirty, looking for this shit and like breathing in all this stuff. So I finally got it out of there, took all the boxes out and like went through the boxes and wrote on the outside boxes, like what's inside the boxes. And I whittled it down. I sold a bunch of stuff through Castle Face. I had a lot of first pressings that I'd be like, why do I have 30 copies of this? I only need like three or four for the archive. Right. But I have all my test pressings. I have every reel of tape I've ever recorded all the way back to when I was a kid doing four track cassettes. I have most of those. Wow. But downstairs, up off the ground in a pretty hermetically sealed area, I have all of our master tapes, all of OCs, Damage Bug, OCS, everything. I learned that from Henry Rollins, actually, because he had such an admirable, I don't know if you ever talked to him. Yeah. He'd be great. Yeah, he's an animal. But his collection of his archival area, mine is a pittance compared to his, but like seeing like raw power on 2-inch reels sitting in his house, I was like, fucking hell, you know, like, but he's like, just, you know, keep it up off the ground.
Yeah.
Keep it in the neutral space. So I'm a little bit of a hoarder when it comes to collecting. I have all the posters I've ever made. I have all the posters that almost all the posters that Fort Thunder made where I came from in Providence, this collective, like Brian Chippendale from Lightning Bolt to Matt Brinkman, making great, massive wheat pasted multicolor screen print posters for like, you know, Man is the Bastard, U.S. Maple, Milk Banana, Do-Rag, like all these amazing bands that were coming through town and mm-hmm. playing there. And I probably have like at least 100 of their posters too, and flat files, you know. And if you've ever moved a flat file, you know it's as much of a pain in the ass as vinyl. It's like another process itself.
So. Well, that's amazing that you've kept all that for so many years. Because I mean, you know, decades of working and touring and doing those sort of things. A lot of bands, all that stuff gets scattered to the wind.
Carried that shit with me everywhere I went. You know, I'd move in and people like, what's that? And I'd be like, I'll show you if you help me carry it up the fucking stairs. You know, like it was under the flat files were under my bed for years. So they've been through like, I've had those. I think I must have had everything in tubes for a long time early on, like posters just in like big mailer tubes.
Yeah. So, but, so what's the plan for that? Is the plan to display it somehow? Like what's the end game?
I mean, no, I don't even really know, honestly. Like my collection, I kept and then eventually did a book of like most of the posters I made that came out through Castle Face. The stuff with like other people, I have a lot of the posters that people have made for my band over the years, especially ones that I like, I'll keep. Every now and then I'll frame a couple, but for the most part, they're just in the archive. It's just the collection, you know, like the Fort Thunder stuff, they must have had some sort of collaborative, you know, showing all, because there was so much work coming out. It was a factory, that place. But the screen prints, you know, I know Matt Brinkman, when he needed money, I definitely took advantage of that when we were kids, and I would buy like literally like a $10 poster of him, and he would be like, it's my last one, you know, and I'd be like, give it to me. I was like, but that being said, if he ever needs it, I have it here in a flat file. So, you know, I've kept all that stuff. It's got silica bags in there and everything. So, keeping it dry.
You knew it was important. It needed
I admired those guys so much in terms of their visual art, especially that mm-hmm. like, and I just loved their posters, you know, like times have changed so much that I would find out when I was a kid about a fucking show from looking at a greasy, like multi-layered thick screen printed wall in Providence too now, like, because I don't have Instagram, I have no idea what's going on anymore. So like, I will literally tell friends when I'm like, if you see something good, let me know. They're like, okay. And they're like, oh, there's a good show tonight, by the way. Idiot, you caveman. So.
So with Castleface, how involved are you in the daily workings of that? I know there's no doubt creative bits, which are fun, but I suppose there's a lot of also businessy bits that can be a bit of a drag.
That's my partner, Matt Jones, all the way. He runs all the accounting, all the mail order. I mean, it would be in name only if he wasn't around. He actually is the taskmaster over there. I like find the bands. We try and have maybe like bi-weekly meetings. I like it rarely even go to the office, honestly, which is just, the office is mostly just mail order. We do work a lot together on prospects of merchandise, like t-shirts and stuff. I'll put them together with people. I'll reach out to bands and get them started on stuff with us. Like, we have some releases coming up this year that I definitively had a hand in. I guess I'm like, I always call myself like the A&R douche at our label. Like, I'm the guy who's like, I'm actually at the show. Like, you know, hey, I like your band. But also, like, you know, our label is the musicians retain all their rights. So we don't own any of the music. That was like a big part of why I started the label. And I think we've been doing it for long enough now and had a lot of bands' first records that a lot of time younger bands that are interested in anything like what we have a part of will be open to the idea of doing a record with us if I approach them. Matt definitely runs the whole show, though. Like, we've had the conversation before where, like, I wouldn't even do mail order if it was just me because I just don't have time. You know, you have to, like, I would do mail order perhaps, like, by hiring a company that does mail order. But really, I would just be distributing through Revolver and selling records at shows, which is the extent of my merchandise is, like, what's on the table at the show.
Right.
It's just so much work. That's why it has to be, you know, the fact that we don't have any employees outside of me and Matt is insane because Matt works so much. Yeah, that's the gist of how our
okay. He's the yin to your yang. So are you guys running into the same? I mean, I suppose you're running into the same vinyl pressing issues as the rest of the world.
Yeah,
your stuff that's coming out this year was done and submitted last year.
Yeah, right? Thanks a lot, Adele. I love that. I don't know how much of it's true, but like, so it's so funny in the vinyl world, and I'm sure you've probably heard something like this, that so much of it is blamed on like Taylor Swift and Adele. They're like, well, Taylor Swift, you know. It's like vinyl had this resurgence years ago, sort of more in the underground. And then it became like middle tier bands were picking up on it and then bigger bands. And now it's like superstars are pressing vinyl. And to me, I mean, whatever, you know, it's how it's just the business. It's how it works. But I mean, who the fuck wants Adele on vinyl? I wonder, like, her fans are like, what's a record? So it's like, you know, we'll see. But to me, that contemporary like algorithmic pop seems like very much a digital thing. Mm-hmm. I don't know how long it's going to last because, you know, to those companies that are whoever it is, like Universal or whatever, that's all about the bottom line with them. So if they're not making the money back off those, perhaps they'll back off on the vinyl tip again and give it back to the peons like us.
I reckon that's the only way one of the few ways they're making money.
I really hope so because it's fucked everybody up, this 8-month drag. That being said, things are starting to lean back the other way, I think, a little bit. We just got a test pressing back very quick, like to the point where me and Matt were both like, holy shit. But I also talked to Corey from Wand, who said he just got his test pressing back after waiting 8 months, which I've never even heard of that. So maybe he had like the worst deal in the world with whatever record pressing place, but 8 months for test pressing is absurd. 8 months from start to finish to get your record back was kind of where the drag was my mm-hmm. understanding. Mm-hmm. So when he told me that, I was like, no, that can't be exact. There must've been other things at play in that timeline.
So what I'm hearing is that, yeah, test pressings can come back very fast, mm-hmm. but they keep kind of pushing it out. I mean, essentially they're lying, or some of them are lying. Here's a test pressing. Sure, we could do it in 6 months. Oh, sorry, it's 8. Oh, sorry, it's 12.
My experience lately with the people we work at in the Czech Republic is they've been recovering a little bit, but they had people working three 8-hour shifts, 24 hours around the clock. And my other understanding is that nobody is fabricating these machines anymore. All of the machines are these archaic record pressing machines. So I don't think I haven't heard of anybody making a new record pressing machine, not even Jack White. Like, I think Jack White's, you know, third man's buying old stock stuff and like maybe revamping it and bringing it up to speed to be to work in a contemporary environment, but like nobody's like, here's my new record press, you know, like it's just not happening, which it needs to happen, because then it would probably be a little bit more ecologically sound and be able to keep up with demand, you know. But
see, I think that whole industry is going to shift once everyone gets a 3D printer. And you can sell a file for people to make their own vinyl out of freaking rice bubble stuff or whatever, you know?
Fascinating idea. I didn't even think of
that. Yeah. Go forward 10 or 20 years and the people, you would sell a download that people download. And
I'm reading a sci-fi book right now where it's about a colony of people that are on another planet, like another Terra kind of thing. And everybody's 3D printing everything. They're like, I woke up and print myself a shirt and walk out of the house. And I was like, geez, they're printing food. So it's not just inorganic matter. It's interesting. We'll see. Sci-fi's, you know, always right in the long run, you know. Philip K. Dick describing the cell phone in like the 50s being pretty spot on, being like, you're addicted to this. And you're like, yeah, Philip K. Dick was right. You know, it's, we'll see. But that's interesting. I like the idea of being able to print it at home. That's really interesting.
Yeah.
To steal your idea.
Yeah, please do.
I wonder how deep can a 3D printer go now? Would you be able to print something as deep as like grooves on a record and have them work?
I think it'll only get more and more detailed. Like right now, you can print the action figures to where you could make it look like someone, like they actually look. And that's a leap from where it was a few years ago. And that's going to be kind of a whole nother industry, because like little parts of things, like I have this turntable that needed these things called V-blocks. And they're little tiny plastic things that were made in the Czech Republic, you know, in the 1960s. Some guy got a schematic on the sizes, used a 3D printer, made them, sold them to me for $22.
Bam. We should get Neil Young on this. Be like, we need high-res 3D printers, bro. Get in there. Be like, it's the only way to listen to music now, you know?
The new Pono players. Actually, in Asia, those lossless players are huge. I don't know if are you familiar? Yeah.
I know about them, but I mean, I'm a huge Neil Young fan, so it's not to disparage him, but I never gave a shit about quality outside of the record. So when it came to digital format, and you know, sometimes people are like audiophiles and they'll be like, well, this kind of sounds like shit. And most of the time for me, I'm like, I can't really hear the difference. I'm deaf as a stone anyway. But with MP3s, when you get down to a certain level, I'm like, yeah, I can hear how this is a little thinner and shittier sounding. Mm-hmm. That being said, it never really concerned me that much. You know, I'd be like, if it's too thin, turn the bass up. But I remember a friend of mine's like uncle got really into those. I'd never even heard of those high-res CDs.
Okay. Yep.
I don't know what they're called, but like I never even heard of them. Then I looked on Discogs. I was like, oh yeah, it's like some Rolling Stones records will be like on these like expensive CDs that are like the high-res version or whatever. They do sound insane. Like when I heard it, I was like, oh, it was like listening to a Rolling Stones song that I very much knew and had always liked. So I knew the sort of like the layout of the song orally or whatever. And hearing it back on this player, I was like, holy shit, I feel like I'm like in the room a little bit. But it also gives it this weird. Sometimes for instance, with me, I'm so simple. I record drums in mono. When I record OCs, because I have two drummers, people become obsessed with stereo, but I'm like, nope, right down the line. And then you can just move it around where you need it. One knob for the whole drum kit, you know, like real simple, like old soul recordings or whatever, like old, like ska recordings, just the drummer's like right here. And you're like, move them over here if you want it to sound like stereo. But the high res thing, It's always been a little lost to me. Isn't vinyl is technically like a high resolution format, right?
Yeah. Well,
I've heard that.
Yeah. But again, it all depends on the weakest link of the chain.
Yeah, which is right? All my gear.
Well, yeah, and look, my gear is pieced together from garage sales and, you know, nice cartridges here and there, but it's not those gold cables that people spend $400 on.
Ogami.
There's a point of diminishing return, right? And look, I'm over 50 now. My hearing is, I got maybe 20 years if I really baby them to even be able to tell the difference. So yeah, it's, you got to kind of cut your losses at some point.
I remember, I always compare it in my mind to the difference between high res and low res to when I first bought a flat screen TV. Because I had started playing video games and I was playing like first person shooter games, and I had like an old shitty TV that was like RCA's, and I was playing like Fallout on it or something. And I was like, I can't see shit because my eyes are terrible. And I was like, fuck it, I'm going to pull a trigger. And I went to like a Best Buy and I like stood at the wall of TVs and I looked at the one TV, and I was like, that one looks good to me. And they were like, it's like $1,000. And I was like, Jesus Christ. There's like all the money in the world. And I bought the TV and I brought it home, which I still have. And I remember everybody came over and they're like, it's so huge. But now it doesn't seem huge at all by comparison to the TVs that people have. That being said, it took me a while to figure out how to get it back down to standard definition, because high def visually to me looks so terrible. I think I'd say like half the people in the world are like, this looks like shit. But the first movie I watched on this TV, a DVD that was not high res or high def, was Rebel Without a Cause. And we put it on and me and my girlfriend were watching it. And I was like, this looks fucking crazy. It looked like a soap opera and it took you right out of the film. And it's sometimes the same way with audio stuff for me, where it gets like, you know, the perfect example is the Rolling Stones. When you hear that, I hear it like playing through a boombox, like on a U-boat deck in Vietnam in my head. You know what I mean? Like, it's like this very simple thing. So when somebody starts putting like too much polish on the turd, you're like, this sounds weird now, you know, like digital recording versus analog recording is like just such a slight difference. But like to the trained ear, you really are like, wow, these highs are not on tape at all, because people are shaving off the hiss on tape. So you're not getting these like chimey highs that are suddenly available. So it's just a very different flavor, you know?
If you get some of the stuff out of like acoustic sounds, some of the 45 RPM records, sometimes mm-hmm. you can sound like Muddy Waters is right next to you or Bill Evans.
45. I'm a fan of the 45 12 inch, you know, for like a shorter record or doubling a record, because it does sound great to me. It's funny though to think of vinyl as a high resolution format, because some of my records are so beat up that I was like, there's no way this is like, like it's like, and I'm like, yeah, you can really hear the fucking food stuck in these grooves. Somebody put a cheeseburger on it 20 years ago.
More wood glue.
A wood glue trick? I can't believe it worked.
I've done wood glue before. And another thing I did, I peeled the wood glue off and I played the peel.
Wow.
Because the peel actually goes into the grooves and makes
an
inverse, right? That's right. And you could hear it. It's not crystal clear, but you could hear
it. Wow. Oh, interesting. You know, that would be a really aggravating record to put out, where you put out the mother, like the negative of a record. Everybody gets like what do they call that? Not the lathe, but you know, the motherboard for a record. Right. And then you send that to everybody, and then they have to make their own wood glue copy of the record. Everybody's like, this is a huge amount of work, but totally worth it. And I mean, now it's for sale, $1,000 on Discogs.
That's not out of place for a band like you guys to be able to do a bit of a stunt like that. You've done 8-tracks, you've done things like, what other formats? Any other wacky formats?
We did the Flexi Books, which was really fun, which was actually ripped off from National Geographic. So it's a playable book with a hole drilled through it. You flip the pages and put them on. I don't know if you ever saw those. It was really fun.
Okay.
So we're actually talking about trying to do another one of those. But like, when I was a kid, I had a book of Flexi Discs. Like low profile spiral bound, and it was all bird songs. So it was clear records on a square page that you could see through the record, and where you put the needle underneath, printed on the page, was a picture of the bird that was that call. So you'd put it on the bird and it'd be like a seagull or whatever the fuck. Right. We did that for Castle Face, and it actually worked. The first one worked really good. The second one had a lot more technical issues, but very cool. But Flexi Discs, one thing right now is that Flexi Discs are not backed up. So that's a little piece of advice for all you vinyl lovers out there. If anybody's trying to make a record quickly, Flexi Discs are still kind of on track compared to actual vinyl.
You could get those within weeks.
They sound a lot better. They sound a lot better. We've done all kinds of stuff though. We've done the printing on like shellac on cardboard. So it's like has a life expectancy kind of thing. Mm-hmm. We did the animated slip mat with the strobes. I don't know if you saw that, but this guy, Harry, in the UK, helped us. He worked out the math to do spinning at 33 RPM, and you can set amount of strobe on your phone on a lot of apps, like strobes per minute, SPM rather, and get it so that if we set it to a certain amount and play it in the dark, it'll animate like a zoetrope the whole slip mat, which is cool. Wow. So start getting into areas that have nothing to do with music when you start getting into this weird shit.
Yeah.
It's just always fun to screw around with stuff like that, though. You know, I'll never say no to an idea. As whether it makes it onto the production is another question, though.
Mm. One thing I've seen is the download cards that you can plant. They're seeds. So if you get your music downloaded, then you plant the card and it becomes a tree or whatever.
Oh,
right?
Oh my God, marijuana would be a great idea, but I bet you get in trouble, huh?
You could do that in a 7-inch as well. Yeah. Oh,
that's a great idea. So it's like $10 a seed from the seed companies, and I'm doing math in my head right now. Everybody could have Jack Herrera Sativa.
Look, John, thanks for spending time with us here. Is there anything you want to talk about we haven't talked about yet?
No, man. I think, you know, I love records. That's why I did the podcast. Mm-hmm. It's a total pleasure. And I saw your lineup. There's a lot of really, a lot of people that I really dig on there. So I figured why not? And yeah, real pleasure meeting you, man.
Oh, man. You too. So any particular issues coming out? Anything you want to talk about?
I have some stuff coming up, but nothing I can really... The problem is none of it's been announced, and I don't want to steal the glory from my partner because that's how he gets off, is announcing things. It's like, so that's his forte.
So let's put it this way. Everyone who's listening, where should they go to get those announcements? Should they like follow Castleface on Facebook or something like that?
Yeah,
Castleface
has social media, so both Facebook and Instagram, but also a mailing list. There's a mailing list on the website that you can sign up for that will inform you in advance of things we have up and coming. Usually every month we have a mailing list that goes out that has one new item usually, and then several represses. So if there's something that people missed or something that you were talking about earlier, that's like exponentially higher than it should be price wise on Discogs, will now be available for $20 or $25 again on mail order. And we've been working on our foreign distribution. So we have more stuff in the UK now with Brexit bullshit. We have UK and Europe proper separated, so that there's no, like, you know, I see people complain all the time, like, it cost me $60 to buy this in Australia. We have a guy in Australia now, so we're working on it.
Ooh,
you know?
Who's your Australia guy?
Richie Ramone, I believe is his name, and I don't know the name of his company off the top of my head, but we do have give me 1 second, let me look the guy up. I got him. Let's see.
Because I'm in Sydney. That's my frustration.
Oh, you're down in Australia. No shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, Richie Ramone's the guy that runs it. And God damn it, I don't know the name of his company, which is absolutely ridiculous. But I bet if you Google him,
That's fine.
Yeah, Matt, like I said, Matt deals with all the bureaucratic end of it, so he would be tisking me right now for not knowing the name of our very good friend Richie. His company down in Australia.
That's all right. Yeah. Why is it called Castleface, by the way?
Patrick Mullins, who was the original drummer and like electronics player in OCS, once referred to this marijuana we got when they first opened pot clubs in San Francisco. We got these. I don't know if you remember this, because I don't know if you're a weed smoker, but for a while they were making, and they still make them, these vegetable protein rolling papers that are clear, so they look like plastic. Mm. But they don't smoke like paper, so they're supposed to be like lighter, but they're just a little bit weird because they're kind of crispy like plastic. But you can roll a joint and then you can see the weed inside of it. So it was like, for a hot minute, that was kind of like the rage at San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And they were giving out these joints of this shit. We got this joint and we're smoking it, kind of laughing about how it's clear. And then both of us got so high, and we were like avid smokers, but I remember being like, and he called it, he nicknamed the feeling we had, clear joint castle face, where you were just like, he's like, yeah, it's like the drawbridge. And basically, both of us were just like struck dumb by this marijuana. So that sort of just made me laugh. And that was where the name of the label came from, was Castle Facing. Castle Facing was when anybody was too loaded to like when you see somebody at a bar, like their friend's like, hey, and they're like, that was called Castle Facing. Somewhat
catatonic, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it's like two windows and a doorway, like, So that's Patrick. Patrick made that up.
Very good. All right, John, I'm gonna let you go. Have a wonderful weekend. Thanks for joining us again, and hopefully we'll see you guys down in Australia before long.
We're working on it right now. Actually, that's one exciting piece of news, is we're slowly developing our plans to come back down under, because we miss it a lot. We always have a really great time down there, for sure.
Yeah. Okay, man.
You take care, buddy.
You too. Cheers. All right, there we are, Mr. John Dwyer of the OCs and Castleface Records. Again, castlefacerecords.com. Pick up some vinyl from the OCs and
tons of other bands they have on the label. Oh, and by the way, Australians, that distributor that John was trying to think of is Strange World Records, strangeworldrecords.com.au. There's a shop in Melbourne, but you could do mail order as well. In fact, I just got a bunch of OC's product from them, so check them out, strangeworldrecords.com.au. And if you enjoyed this interview, there's more of it. Patreon.com/vinylguide, an extended episode with more chit-chat with Mr. John Dwyer. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please share these episodes on your social media. Put them on your Facebook, tweet them out on Twitter, put them on Instagram, MySpace, TikTok, whatever you got. Please help spread the word. And of course, word of mouth also helps as well. Make sure your record collector buddies know about the Vinyl Guide podcast. Even show them how to do it on their smartphone. Podcasts are not always that easy to set up. So if you can help a friend or two get that sorted, that would be much appreciated from us and them as well, I'm sure. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.